Hello, everybody. 12:12 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we are saying hello at the beginning, and we'll be saying a little goodbye at the end, but that's coming up a little bit later. Right now, it's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. Andrea Haines is here, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Kelly Leonard will be along a little bit later. You know Kelly's name. Well, you know his dad, Roy Leonard, but Kelly has had a long career at Second City, currently the creative advisor at Second City Works, and he's got a podcast I want to tell you about. It's called Yes And. And it's about improv, creativity, and all of that, not just on stage, but in the workplace and really in life. So Kelly Leonard a little bit later on the Business Lunch. Right now, hello, Andrea Haines. How is your week so far?
Hi, Steve. It's been, you know, how work weeks can be. Some are more challenging than others. I'm not sorry. We have a three-day weekend coming up. Let me just say that.
Well, let me just say not all of us have a three-day weekend. But
oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
I'm happy for those of you who do. It's been more than a three-day weekend for Botrust Coffee. What's going on there?
Yeah, so that saga is continuing to play out. So in December, Marcus Lemonis, noted local TV famous entrepreneur.
Billboard guy. See him on CNBC. He's got a show.
Exactly, The Prophet.
The Prophet. And so let's back up a little bit, though. Botrust is that there's 10 shops around. They started with tech money, right, with the idea to get really big.
Yeah.
Ran into some obstacles, and here comes Marcus.
Yep. So Marcus steps in and said in December that he had bought this company, had big plans for it.
Was excited about
the brand. Yes, $3 million. Was ready to go with it. So now we're in January, and it looks like that deal's falling through. I mean, anything can happen in business, right? But certainly the relationship between the two seems to have soured, and it looks like that deal's in jeopardy.
Phil, is it Tadros?
Right.
Is the founder. And these are two sort of big personality guys.
Definitely.
And now they're saying nasty things about each other.
Definitely. They both sort of take the gloves off, and they, you know, they deal with their business themselves, so there's no kind of filter happening there. They're kind of, it's definitely turning into more of a raw battle than we often see.
And we'll see what happens, but nothing, no coffee at Botrust.
Not for now.
And no sign, really. I mean, Tadros is looking for other cash at this point.
There has to be some kind of, you know, let's call it a bailout. There has to be something because it just, you know, he can't pay his workers right now, and that's why the stores are not operating.
Have you considered stepping in at all?
You know, I do love coffee. I don't know if, you know, at the $3 million level, I'm a buy-in at that.
Mia, our Mac and Mia is this trunk club for kids, and we've talked about them before. And the founder of it, Marie Tillman, is doing great on her own. She's also known for the fact that she is the widow of Pat Tillman, the former Arizona Cardinal who left the NFL to join the military in the days after 2001 and was killed in action. So Marie Tillman has this Mac and Mia trunk club for kids, and they just got a big infusion of cash.
They did. They got $3 million to continue to build out this business, which is for the stylish tot, I guess I would probably say if I were marketing the company.
It's 6 years and under.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So it's the same kind of idea as Trunk Club, which more and more people are familiar with, where you get a box of, you know, clothes that you've had some guidance in choosing, and you get to decide what you want to keep or send back.
So they get six items, about $30 a piece.
Yeah.
That's spendy. That's a lot of cash.
It's kind of spendy. Yeah.
Right. But she got a lot of money. So I'm trying to think who the market is for this. I mean, are they rich parents? Or are they I don't think it would be a grandparents' gift to the kids because it comes every month like that.
Yeah, I would think well-heeled parents who just don't necessarily have the time to stomp around or who just maybe don't like, you know, it kind of right. Bridges that gap between internet shopping and kind of getting it done that way.
So parents who
not having to trample through the stores, but just getting to evaluate, try on, look at the things. You know, it always looks different when you get it home, right? So this way you're starting out with it at home.
So parents who are playing polo with the ponies and don't have time to go shopping.
There's a lot of those, right?
Actually, though, I do like that they brought on this executive from the Trunk Club, and he said something very wise and blunt or honest. He said, look, it's a do-over for me. I've been through this, and now I know all the mistakes I made at Trunk Club, and I can correct those, amend those, and not commit those mistakes here.
Yeah, and Trunk Club was also in the news this week with the founder leaving. They had been acquired by Nordstrom. Nordstrom has basically written down the value of Trunk Club. So, yeah, but, you know, that's how the ecosystem grows, right, with people then going off and
right.
doing
things. Tell me about Dog Kitlos.
So this is an interesting and hopefully positive in the end story. Dog lives in Chicago, at least now part-time. He is the co-founder of Siri, which is the voice, voice-activated assistant on our iPhones, who we know and love. So big deal. And he found out a couple months ago that he had the same pancreatic cancer as Steve Jobs.
Oh, really?
So that, of course, was a devastating, devastating illness in that situation. It sounds like dog has found it early, found it during a routine kind of physical, it sounds like. He's already had surgery, and his prognosis post-surgery is improved. You know, he's 49, he has children, and is still very much working in the tech world. He's already built another artificial intelligence system, so very much hope that he comes out on top and keeps working.
All right, best to dog. We've got time for one more. Genevieve Tears has been on the show before. She came up with Sitter City. And then after Donald Trump one day announced this new sort of women-involved sort of pack, I don't know, organization where they want to get women involved in having a sort of a counterforce to Donald Trump. How are they doing?
Yeah, so they just started this, and they're, you know, kind of around this women's march. Obviously, the inauguration is next week. Some of this stuff is coming to a head, but they're like one of the new efforts by women that came out of the election of Donald Trump, but also, let's say, the defeat of Hillary Clinton, and a lot of women's business groups looking at, are we coming together, you
know? Right, so they thought they might have been there, people? And then they weren't.
Exactly.
Right, and so what do we do now?
So they're kind of galvanizing, and this is one of the groups, you know, she's kind of moved from this tech world into, you know, this is sort of a political, almost activism kind of role, so she'll be doing that, and we're anxious to see how that works out.
Yeah, me too. She's a dynamic woman.
Yes, and bringing a tech sensibility into that political action world, so.
As are you, Andrea Haines, a dynamic woman. Just around the corner from a long 3-day weekend.
Yes.
Enjoy it. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Yaligan. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, 1222 on a Friday afternoon, the weekend right around the corner. Tom Gimbel is here. He is the CEO and founder of LaSalle Network and comes by from time to time, most Fridays. Tom, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Steve.
All right, so one of the things I want to talk to you about today is transition, and we're seeing it everywhere, right? We're seeing it in the city of Chicago today. The Attorney General has a news conference and announced this sort of consent decree or agreement with the city, and one of the first questions from reporters was, well, you're all going to be gone.
Right.
You know, you're leaving in a week with the change in the administration. There will be new people coming in, and it's interesting how someone who's new to an already existing environment sort of adapts.
Yeah, well, government's really an interesting thing because the transition, you know, what President Obama said in his farewell address in Chicago at McCormick Place the other day was accurate, right? It's the best, democracy is the best in the world, in the United States, because it's a peaceful transition of power.
Right.
To differing groups.
They're talking about the instructions in the White House. You know, you'll have a whole new staff coming in, by and large.
Yep.
And just instructions like, when is the White House mess open, or where are the printers, and all of these things that people haven't really
scoped out.
Yeah.
And I think that's, if there's one thing that doesn't get enough publicity about the incoming administration and the changes, is that overlooking the basic stuff.
Yeah.
Now, in corporations, it's very different because in a corporation, it's not a democracy, it's a dictatorship. Right. And even ones like, I think we have a great culture and we get recognized a lot. It's still at the end of the day, there's jobs are dependent on people following a corporate process.
And so the question is, how does this dictator ingratiate himself with the people he's dictating?
The key is that when I say a dictator, and obviously I'm being loose with the word, right, for all the listeners
right, out there.
But
a benevolent dictator.
So what a good leader does is they solicit opinions from subordinates on the team, and then they make educated decisions based on that information, and then the rank and file have to follow that decision.
Right.
And the key is when you have a new leader transition come in, an attorney general, a district attorney, what have you, mayor, governor, that they need to find out who what we call the KIs in corporate America, the key influencers are.
Okay. Right?
And how those people can spread the message down. You need key, loyal people on your team.
And so are these people you bring in with your team? Or they probably,
it could be
in
both.
Many cases, are already there.
They
though.
Should be already there, and you should be looking for the best people. I mean, it's not, I think using the sports analogies, which you and I do occasionally, it's not the Michael Jordans, it's the Steve Kerrs and the John Paxsons.
Right.
It's finding who that key role player is who's going to run through a wall for you in practice. Those are the people you need to have on your team.
One of the things, and you, I think, alluded to it just a minute ago, but it's also important to show a little vulnerability, right?
Absolutely.
Or to not come in like as if you know everything.
You need to. There is an art to humility, right? And it's also knowing what changes need to be made and taking the information. But there's two sides. There's the people aspect, the EQ, the emotional intelligence, but then there's also the analytical side. And the numbers don't lie. Right. You know, if you go into a government job, you know where the spending is. You know where you need to hit. The question is, do you want to go and do that?
Right.
Do you want to tackle the personnel issues that come along with that? A lot of people don't.
No. And trust your team with the idea that if you come into a new situation, you might want to do it all. You might until you find out those KIs.
Yep.
But you've got to be able to let the workers do the work.
Yeah. The if you ask around, you know what I always say to when you're making a transition, you take over a team is, and it depends how big the team is. You take over a government office that has 2,000 people; it's a little bit different. But if you have a manageable team, is to say, tell me, rank the people, the top 10 people who you like the best. That's column number one.
Okay.
Column number two, who's the most competent today? Might not be the same people you like.
No, right.
And then number three, who's got the most potential? Maybe completely different than the other two. And see where those overlap. And those are the people that you really need to put your arms around.
So see who you see who are in one or two or maybe all three lists.
All three of those
counts. Not one or two, but two or three lists.
Yeah, the people who have the most potential may not be your key influencers today, but you've got to make sure that you're developing them over the long term. The people that you like, they may be full of you-know-what, and you got to keep them over to the
yeah,
distance.
Yeah, but they're so much fun to be around.
Yes.
Okay, let's go back to government. Mike Pompeo is the incoming CIA director.
Yep.
Okay, he's a team leader, the leader of the CIA. Mm-hmm. He reports to the president-elect, or will be the president, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is saying very bad things about the team that Pompeo will be leading.
Mm-hmm.
So how does someone walk into that situation and satisfy both constituencies?
I think it goes along to, right, and this is very apparent in sports. If the common denominator of the team is that they want to do well to spite the coach,
right,
the hard-nosed coach,
right.
Hey, the one thing we have in common is we hate that you-know-what, and we're going to do great in spite of him, that's great. And that's the message that he takes to his team and says, listen, whether the president-elect or the president next week believes in us or not, our job is to do our job.
But that's kind of an us against them thing, isn't it? Does that work?
Yeah, I think it works very much so in politics because the belief of an agency like the CIA is to protect and serve this country, right? And so if you get people to say, it doesn't make a difference. We serve the president of the United States, the role, not the human being. We serve that job and we have respect for that. He may say this or that. There's only one way to prove him wrong. That is to do our job to the X level.
Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network, LaSalleNetwork.com. Thanks for coming by.
Always good to be with you.
Have a great weekend. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:38 on the Wintrust Business Lunch on a Friday afternoon. As Kim said, a little cloudy, a little dreary this weekend, but it's still a weekend, and for a lot of us, a three-day weekend, so that's not too shabby. Kelly Leonard is in the studio, creative advisor for the Second City and Second City Works, and WGN Rugrat from all the way back in the 70s and 60s. Kelly, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks for coming in. Let's start just a little more generally with what's going on at Second City now when it comes to the B2B, to Second City Works and all of that. What's that about?
So Second City forever has been training people, right? You know, we all know the people who end up on Saturday Night Live, but the vast majority of people who study at Second City are doing it to get better at their business.
Most of us know the guy who thinks he's funny at the cocktail party who took a class at Second City.
Right, and I apologize for him.
Right, thank you very much.
So there's that guy. And then Second City for the last couple decades has also been brought into a lot of businesses because turns out the stuff that makes you be good at improvisation, which is being agile, be in the moment, be innovative, be creative, is something that's needed in business. So we have these two different worlds, right? The training center where people come and take these classes for 8 weeks, and then the one-off three-hour workshop we do with a corporation. So the new thing we just started is a thing called Second City Rewire You, and it's basically a mashup of both.
Okay.
So this is for like high potential people inside businesses who want a deeper dive into the sort of Second City pedagogy, but they're not going to come for 3 hours every single week.
Right.
So this takes place, you know, over quite a few weeks, and it's about 15 hours of training, but it gives you really deep training in things like being your authentic self, being innovative, being creative, listening, all the stuff that you need to do in order to be your best, not just in work, frankly, but in life. And this thing is starting up soon. We're pretty excited about it.
So this is new to us as a world, isn't it? The emphasis on this in the workplace and recognizing the I don't know if it's new to the world, but the putting more emphasis and value in this sort of communication.
Right, because we used to call it soft skills, which was always the thing that people were like, oh, well,
no one wants soft skills.
No one wants soft skills. Right. But then they turn around and realize that that's exactly the thing they need because, oh, it turns out that business is about storytelling and business is about communication
right.
and business is about sales. And what is a great salesperson? A great salesperson is a great storyteller
right.
and someone who has intense listening skills to make the person who's across from them feel that they're really being heard. And you, when you're improvising, the thing is, you can't stop listening to the sentence that the person's saying to you like the rest of us do. You have to listen to the end of that sentence because it might contain crucial information.
Which, in a way, brings us to yes and,
yeah.
right? Which is a phrase in improv. Why is that a significant phrase?
Well, because that's like sort of ground zero of improvisation, which is if you're going to make something out of nothing, and that's what improv is, groups of people making something out of nothing, the way to make that not happen is by saying no. And you can't just stop at yes. You have to say yes and. You have to affirm and contribute. Also the title of my book, which came out in 2015.
And it's the title now of a podcast that is at WGNradio.com.
Yeah. So for the last 6 or 7 months or so, we have been interviewing people every week who work at the intersection of creativity and business and talking to them about what makes them tick. Very often, it contains elements of improv. And these are CEOs. These are CMOs. These are entrepreneurs. Sometimes they're actors. Mostly it's business people.
And each person then tells sort of their yes and story in the podcast.
Yeah. So we end every podcast and we ask the person who's in front of us, do they have a story from their life where they could have said no, but then in for whatever reason, they said yes and something entirely unpredictable came out.
Can I tell you mine?
Yes.
I hadn't thought of that. But I applied for an internship at WGN Radio in 1984.
Uh-huh.
Right, 84, 83. And I went to the Bradley Place
yep.
where WGN TV and radio were at the same time, and I applied for the TV internship.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman named Ann Corbillis, who was in charge of personnel at the time, she said, well, you want to do radio while you're here? And I said,
yes, and.
And I didn't get the TV internship.
But you got the radio
and
one.
Things worked out okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was listening to the most recent one you did. It was Carolyn Webb.
Yeah, Caroline is awesome.
Caroline.
Yeah.
Who wrote a book, How to Have a Good Day.
Right. So she's an Oxford and Cambridge trained economist who worked for about 16 years at McKinsey and has just started her own firm. But she uses all the stuff she learned in behavioral science and all the experiences she had in business to mash those things together to get people to work more effectively.
And so that's sort of where we are with these sort of soft skills and the value of them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
My yes and was, you know, this building panic as I got closer and closer to the front of the room where I had to do this routine in front of everybody. It was to Adele's Rolling in the Deep. I'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And at every moment, I wanted to run from the room. I was so terrified. I was so mortified. And I thought, okay, my yes and is to say, yes, you're terrified. Yes, this is a disaster. Yes, you should not be here. And wouldn't it be interesting to go through with this?
Yes.
It's Caroline Webb talking about her yes and story from the podcast Yes And.
Yeah, well, she and her husband decided to audition to be sort of extras at the Olympics in London, and she overperformed in the dance routine. And when she got called back, she was one of 200. The rest were professional dancers. She wasn't to go do this routine. And so she ended up going ahead with it. And while she was not put in a dance show, they actually put her in the Olympics.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And so what we're talking about here is communication on stage that translates to business, but really we're talking about life.
We are talking about life because we are. If we're talking about a place where we're not handed a script, that's life. So you are improvising from the minute you get up to every interaction with your children, to your interactions with your coworkers, and it's amazing how similar those things are.
Right, and once you do one well, it's easy to translate to do the other well.
It should be.
Which reminds me of another sort of, I think, improv saying, see all obstacles as gifts.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Explain it for me.
Well, it's the fact that when you're on stage and something crazy happens, you can't just deny it. Everyone in the audience sees what happened. You have to go to it and use it. And I know in my career, it has normally been the most insane things that have ended up being our greatest successes.
Yeah. Well, it's just this sort of thing. You're either going to be beaten down by something in your way, or you're going to use it and move around it, move over it.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually just came downstairs from taping our latest podcast with a gentleman named David Hornick, who's a venture capitalist, who some of you might know from Adam Grant's book, Give and Take. He's
sure, the first story. Yeah.
So David is this Silicon Valley.
Nutria kid, right?
No, different.
I'm thinking of a different book. Yeah.
Different book. But David is been very, very successful, and we're having the podcast, and at the end, when he's about to tell his yes and story, this beeping starts to happen on his computer.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm sorry if you're hearing this beeping. Maybe we need to stop. I'm like, we're not stopping. This is the best part of the podcast.
Right.
And I'm like, you are a millionaire who has funded all these different tech companies. You're in Silicon Valley, and you can't get this beep off your computer. This is brilliant.
Here we go. I'm thinking of the book by Frank Bruni, wrote a book not too long ago, the New York Times columnist, about being accepted in college and all of that.
Oh, interesting.
And that was a new career. It'd be a good guess for you, too.
Yeah, totally.
I'll just book the show for you, okay?
Please do.
Who else you want?
That would be easier.
That is Kelly Leonard, the name of the podcast, Yes And. And you can find it as at WGNradio.com, WGN Plus, all those spots, right?
All those, yeah.
Great. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, when's the last time you went to the mall? When you went to the mall, how long did you have to walk between stores before you found one that was actually filled? There are, by some counts, about 300 malls in the U.S., and about a third of that number expected to close over the next 10 years. I pulled that from a column by Robert Reed in the Chicago Tribune. The question is what to do with all that empty space. He joins us now in the Business Lunch. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right, so the Orange Julius is long gone, right? And Andy's Pretzels are still around. But what is it that's leading to the failure of these malls?
The departure of the department stores as we know them. You know that some big names are going to be leaving the malls at Sears and Macy's. The Limited is not a department store, but a specialty store that's going out of business. There's going to be a lot of vacancies. And they were anchoring these malls. You know, back in the 60s, 70s, and so on, these were the go-to places for retail.
Okay, but when I would, they were the go-to places, but were they the ones bringing in the revenue for the commercial properties?
They definitely were bringing in the people, and yeah, they were sizable revenue generators, and I might add, tax revenue generators as well, so they're important to the communities.
And if they're going, the malls are suffering.
Yes, and that's the challenge. When you look at the situation, and you mentioned the 300 malls, by the way, are the number that are anticipated to close. There's three times that many out there right now, so
there's a big
capacity. And when you look at what's going on, these vacancies are not going to stop, and developers and city planners and others are going to have to look for creative ways to fill that space.
How are we doing here? There are, 60 malls in Illinois?
Yeah.
I think of the Lincoln Mall, right? That closed not too long ago.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, we have had malls that have closed. We've also seen some indications that people are thinking creatively about what to do with them. Some have been turned into mega churches where you're able to go. Because when you think about it, there's ample space. There's parking. Logistically, they're located pretty attractively.
I guess the best use of a vacant mall ever in the history of Illinois was in the Blues Brothers movie.
Well, that's one way to do it.
That's been about 35 years ago, so I don't know if that's, that's not a very good example.
No, what you'd like to see, though, are some creative applications. We've seen throughout the country where they have been turned into data centers, the senior citizen retirement villages, office complexes, maybe a combination of retail and other things like that to become more of a community center as opposed
have
to a drag
on it. Have you seen much forward thinking in Illinois?
Unfortunately not. And why we're not getting there is anybody's guess, but we tend to like to sneak up on our problems in Illinois. But in this case, there's room to go.
Okay, so I guess my next question to that then, who is it that's supposed to be doing the thinking? Is it the municipalities, the state, or there are people holding this commercial real estate?
Excellent point. And it's all of the above. They have to start thinking about what to do if a major anchor tenant leaves and you can't fill that space. The last thing you want is for a mall to go completely downhill, and then you have to get up and either knock it down or find some other terrible use for it.
Right.
And so that's really important.
Okay, so I've heard community colleges, right?
Absolutely, community colleges. When you think about it, you've got a lot of wide open space that you can utilize in a lot of different ways. We've seen community colleges in some markets, hospitals in some areas as well. So there's a lot of things that you can do. I guess the concern is that in some of these situations, these are nonprofits. Maybe they won't generate the tax revenues or the returns that a community would like, but they have to be more open-minded about that.
And that's all another part of it when it comes to the return, when it comes to taxes, right? Either way, the towns, the rest of us, are losing tax revenue as these things grow in vacancy. But if we're going to turn it around, it's going to cost us as well.
Absolutely. I mean, in a lot of cases that we looked at across the country, there are what they call these public-private partnerships. That means that the community puts money in for new sewers, new roads, and all sorts of things to kind of make it a more attractive and up-to-date facility.
Right. Okay, so if the teenagers aren't meeting at the malls anymore, where are they going, Robert?
I guess they're doing it in cyberspace or other places, but the malls are not what they used to be. And we have seen some disturbing trends in malls, too, as well, where the gathering of people is, you know, it's been a little tough.
Yeah, things have changed, haven't they? Robert Reed, you can read more of that at chicagotribune.com. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. That's going to wrap things up for the Business Lunch on this Friday afternoon. Okay, radio, we talk a lot about change in business, and there's certainly more change in radio than most businesses, at least it feels like it to me. And there's a change here today on the Business Lunch. Michael Heidemann, who has produced this program for the better part of the last year, is moving on. He's going to stay up a little later and will be producing pretty late with Patty Vasquez beginning on Monday. And Patty's gain is my loss. I look forward to our next regime. It will be great and all of that. But Michael Heidemann, you got to meet him. He is probably the most optimistic person I've ever met, and he has made each show here better than the next. And I appreciate that. I will miss working with him, and I know things will be great in his future. So here's to Michael Heidemann today.